K4 CPA Mobile.
CPA, K4 Lima Alpha Zulu. I'm pretty close to my destination, but I figured I'd jump in and say how you doing this afternoon.
Afternoon. I just got my hair cut and I'm headed back to the house, and just thought I'd throw out my call and see if anybody was around. Yeah. So what are you up to this afternoon?
Taking a little bit of a break from work here to go pick up a part for my Jeep that finally came in over here at the driveline shop. And I'm going to head back and do a little bit more work on the computer, putting some stuff together, finishing up a project we just got done not too long ago, and probably head home a little bit early just in case it does decide it wants to snow this afternoon.
Wouldn't that be crazy if it does decide to snow, huh? It's hard to believe, but I don't know. They said we would get like a dusting to an inch, so, or an inch or two, and I don't think it's going to be a very big event if we have one at all.
I don't think it'll be anything like what we had last weekend. I'm really not all that worried about it, but, you know, it's one of those excuses to go home a little bit early is kind of the thought process. But, you know, I'd rather be safe than sorry. You know, I work about 40 minutes from home, so, and I'm not driving the car with four-wheel drive today. Well, it does have four-wheel drive, but it's presently two-wheel drive because of this part I've got to go pick up. So I'd rather not get stuck over here in Spartanburg while I live over in Simpsonville with ice or snow on the ground.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I'm driving a Mustang, so I definitely don't want to be in the snow. I did, however, a good many years ago, it's probably been, I don't know, 6 or 8 years ago, we had a pretty decent snow, and they didn't let us off from work early, and it was, I got off at 5:30, and I had to drive from the Motor Mile in Greenville to Traverse Rest, and I had a 96 Mustang, and with a 5-speed, and believe it or not, we had like 5 inches of snow, but I got it home, and I just had to take it real slow, but I figured it wouldn't go at all because there's not that much weight on the back tires, but it did pretty decent as long as you didn't step down on the gas.
It was a real quick way to get the back end of a Mustang loose. I had a 94 Mustang back about 10 years ago, and that thing would squirrel loose on wet pavement if I tried, but it had low profile tires on it and stuff like that. I was running 18 inch wheels on it. Interesting part, my dad actually, he just bought a 96 Mustang GT 5-speed convertible, that whole nine yards. That is in really, really good shape. I haven't seen it yet. It hasn't gotten here yet. The guy's bringing it over to him this weekend, but it's a 96, and it's only got like 75,000 original miles on it. So the thing is like brand new. Like it looks like a showroom car. I'm excited to see it when it gets here. Anyway, I'm going to jump out here for just a second, run in and grab this part, and I'll be back. So I'll holler at you when I get back out here. KB4 CBA, KK4 LAZ.
Be in here for a few more minutes. 73 is KB4 CBA.
Bought another standard shift. Duh. N0TR.
Who wants a stinking automatic anyway?
People, Dave, good afternoon. Well, you know, I had a friend that his daddy-in-law did mineland reclamation. And so they were in a lot of mud a lot of times. And he owned a fleet of trucks. And he believed that too. But as the automatics evolved, he said, said, Tom, he says, the automatic far outperformed the standard shifts in conditions like that. I would have never thought it.
I tell you, you know, that Mustang I had, this is a, well, of course, this is the third one I've owned, but I was really surprised because I had to go up and down those hills on points at highway, and they go by, you know, Lowe's, and then I was headed north toward Travis Rest, and you know, it was there were a lot of cars on the road and a lot of snow, and I just put that thing in second gear and I didn't touch the gas, and it would the computer would keep it running, and it would pull up those hills. Now if I tried to go to third, it would start spinning, so I had to keep it in second. But it did a great job. I was really amazed. But anyway, I'd rather have a four wheel drive in the snow though.
10-4 DJC.
Fed, KB4CPA.
Yeah, go ahead, Jerry. Let's send Gerald to you.
Hey, David, did you buy another car?
Recently, I've had this one a little over 3 years, and it's a 2012.
I know you were talking about getting one of those Broncos for a while, but that must have fallen by the wayside. You probably can't even find one, I don't guess. Go ahead, Tom. It's kind of chippy outside today.
Yeah, I'm showing 35, and it was 32 this morning, so it ain't buds, Jerry. Good to hear you. I sent you a real good joke here this morning, and Dave also. Well, Dave, that's all I drove for many, many years. I had a 53 Chevy, had an old 216 six-cylinder with a three-speed on the column. And then I bought a 55 First Series four-window. It was a, I don't know if it was GMC or Chevy. I think it was Chevy. But at any rate, when I got it, it had a four-speed hydromatic transmission in it. It said 1, 2, 3, 4 on it. But that was part of the reason the boy wanted to sell it across the street. I get $400 for it. My first one, I only give $50 for it. So we put a three-speed 66 Chevrolet Synchromesh in it. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I let the daughter have it all the way through high school, and it served her very well. I just hated to give it up. It tore my heart out. But Dad willed me his 74 Dodge, and it was a 318 and 3 on the column. So I got a lot of experience with standard shifts for many, many years. And then our first couple of Toyotas had standard shift, and I really loved them, but I got a bad left foot now, and I just couldn't tolerate it in traffic at all. But I certainly, one of the brakes were better in that respect, and yeah, I navigated a lot of ice and snow up there in Kansas with a standard shift, KB4CBA and 0TR.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, an automatic, you could put it in the gear you wanted it in, and to make it stay there, but I don't know. The thing I don't like about automatics is when you step down on it and it's hunting a gear, you know, like, okay, which gear I need to go into here, you know. Based on, you know, how much gas I'm giving it, and you know, this, that, and the other, all the inputs it's getting, and I don't don't know. It just, sometimes it just drives me crazy. But now my wife's Toyota Highlander, I like the way the transmission shifts in it. And I don't know what it's called, but it's a good automatic trans.
You see, Friday, you know, this last Honda Accord we bought, ours is a 2018, they offered that model. It wasn't in the same trim level, but they offered that model with a 6-speed, standard. And I tell you, when we originally started driving automatics years ago, and then when Toyota hit the U.S. shores, we started buying 4 or 5 speeds for Toyotas, because that's mostly what we had. I don't think we owned a... I think I bought my first Honda around 85 or so, but it was one of those CRX 2-seater basic deals, you know, just for driving back and forth to work. But my wife, when I traded her, she had a little 91, or I think it was a 91 Corolla, and it had one of those 16-valve engines deal over here at Camps. It was a Corolla, it was at the top of the line, and that thing required, I don't remember now, but they want you to run regular, they want you to run mid-grade or premium in it. That was the quietest engine we'd ever seen, and transmission, you could just flick it with your finger from one gear to the other. I mean, I thought I was going to have to wrestle her to get that thing away from her to switch over to automatic. Of course, now and traffic automatics are a lot easier. But if I had a performance car like a Mustang or something like that, I definitely want some type of manual transmission.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea there. Let me see if I got it. But Dave, this Avalon and the Tacoma, the transmissions, well, the standard shift transmissions in the Toyotas were the slickest I ever drove, I think. But this automatic and this Avalon is a 2011, both of the vehicles are. And, they're just smooth as silk. They're 4 speeds. But now I know a lot of the Chryslers, they offer 10 speeds in them. And some of the cars are 8 speeds. So the automatics have evolved a great deal. Now on the highway, we get really exceptional mileage. We'll get 34. And that's driving 70, 80, whatever it is out there on the I-26. And or even through the mountains are we done real good. And I don't drive like the age I am, I guess you'd say, but I don't drive over 10 over the speed limit. And they still try to run over me. But the Avalon's a real highway car. And I love that automatic. It and it's 6-cylinder, 3-liter, I think, or 4, I don't know. 265 or 285 horse. It's enough for me, Dave. This is Enduro
GR. Our Highlander has a V6. I'm not sure what size it is. I think it's I'm not going to guess. Oh, me. All right, well, I'm in the garage here, so I'm going to run inside. I think I got to go pick up a prescription. I think my grandson wants to ride with me to do that, so I'm going to pick him up and go get a prescription here. I'll be back in a few minutes. But anyway, y'all carry on. Talk to you later. 73's KB4CBA.
Have a good afternoon. Don't hear from you again.
Are you there? Zero TR 73. Oh, I'm sitting down here. I'm putting in a light. It's just a busy project. They're about, 20 inches long or so, or 24 and 2 inches wide. And they're motion activated, and I put them in my tool cabinets. And it says that they're power supply is 24 volt and 1 amp. But I measured them with a digital amp meter, and they only draw for three of them, and they're in series. So you just run your hand under one of them, and the other two light. They only draw 180, so if you put another one on there, it draw obviously 240. Well, the way I figured, that's way under 24 volts at 1 amp. And but then you look at the nameplate data on these, and they say 8 watts. So I'm thinking the governing factor is not the power supply, but the fact that they're in series, and it must go through a printed circuit board. And I had a buddy up in Kansas, Jerry, and his whole garage burned down because he had a wall wart, as we call them, power supply, catch on fire and caught his garage on fire while nobody was at home. So I hate to do it, but I'm just going to put another power supply on one. I goofed because when you order them, you get three of them, and I was just going to series that one of those on each tool cabinet and have four lights in each cabinet. But just to be on the safe side, I don't think I will.
First, a lot of the stuff painted on these power supplies, especially these wall warts or imported stuff, you may or may not get what you think you get. And the same thing with LED lights. This one that you suggested, Tom, has turned out to be a really, really great light. I really love that thing. They also make a floor model of that we may try. And the clamp on, I know you have the clamp on, but I really love this light, especially the fact that it'll change the color temperature so you can hit it to it's about 85 or 88 CRI, and that's pretty accurate for color rendition. And I like the white, you know, the 5,000K for the, I can see things better, like electronic stuff. I'm working on anything, I can see stuff better with that. Really, but that was a really excellent solution you gave me and suggestion. And it's just, I love the thing. It's lightweight, easy to use, pretty inexpensive too on top of that. You were talking about the transmission. Our Honda Accord's got one of those CVTs, and people say good things and bad things about them. I don't know whether they're good or bad. I know my daughter had one in her Honda for years, never had a minute's trouble out of it. But one of the things Honda did a few years ago, and for a long time, the top of line Accords had a V6. And what they've done, Tom, is all of them now have I think there's the very top of the line in the Accord runs a little bit bigger engine, but still a four-cylinder, but they run turbocharged fours now. And we get I get 38, 39, 40 miles per gallon out of the highway a lot of times now with this one. But I don't drive quite as fast as you do. But they also offered one with a 10-speed paddle shifters, and it had one of those heads-up displays. And I drove it, and the daggum thing confused me. I said, take me back. I want something. I didn't like the idea of having the panel pop up in front of me like I'd fly a helicopter.
Heard paddle shifter? Is that what you call it?
Subaru had those things in their WRX. WRX Subaru is their high performance car that's built on a $15,000 body. You know, it's just not very high end on the inside or outside, but it's got 360 horsepower turbocharged, and that thing will smoke all, it's all wheel drive, it smokes all four. And the shifters, Tom, actually on each side on the steering wheel, you know, right there, inside the steering wheel, you can just hit it to make it manually shift, even though it's an automatic. And that's what this one did in this Honda. You had 10 speed, and the sport version of it had the paddle shifters on the, so you can run through the gears yourself, like what Dave was talking about. And it would stay in, if you hit second gear, it would stay in second gear unless you got up above a certain RPM. Then it would force shift, but otherwise you could run second, third, fourth, you know, without having switch to another gear.
Okay, I know what you mean now. Well, mine, you can shift it. You just tap the shifter in the center console there, and you can shift through the gears. The only place I've ever used that is going up to the Wireman. He's got a real, real super steep hill going up there, and I always kick it down into one or two to go up that because it's real windy and it's real vertical, put it that way. But other than that, I don't think I used that thing half a dozen times in the several years that we had it. But quite a few of them now are four-cylinder twin turbos. But you know, back in the old days, and it goes to my inexperience with those, I'm sure they perfected them, but they had a tendency to run hot, the turbochargers, that is, and then they went to water cooling them. I don't know how they do them now, Jared, but they must be a whole lot more reliable. My son-in-law has a Buick Grand National, and I imagine you're familiar with those. I seen one auction off the other day. They had real low mileage for like $200,000. His is probably worth, you said, around $40,000 now, but he's had it ever since he was in college when he was at the University of Wisconsin. And it don't have a lot of miles on it. And he puts it in storage every year up there in Michigan and keeps it inside and then brings it out in the summertime. But, boy, that thing will get up and smoke them. I drove it one day down to get the air conditioner looked at, and he had a turbo go out of it the other day, but my gracious, I forget what year that is. It's in the 80s, and they still was able to replace that thing. I was surprised.
I had a friend of mine had one of those Grand Nationals. His was black. They called it a Black Widow, I think. It must have been 87, maybe. 88, something like that, but that thing would absolutely fly. But I think as far as production type cars, I think Volvo is the one that first came out with this intercooled turbos, and this one's got an intercooler too, but I don't know enough about it to know what the heck it does. All I know is it's got plenty of power. It doesn't have that turbo boost like you used to have on the old ones. I had a Volkswagen Jetta turbo diesel. And, you know, that, you had to really get on that thing, and then all of a sudden that turbo would kick in, and that was, man, it'd fly then. But the turbos in those days, time weren't, I don't know whether they're just built different or what, but, you know, those things were spinning about 100,000 RPM, I think. And they just, somebody told me, said, you know, you might get 100,000 miles out of them, you might get 80,000, but he said, but if you use it a good bit, you know, it was going to give you, you know, you're going to have trouble with it sooner or later. But I'm sure they're a lot more reliable now than they were then, but actually that's just the scheme of things now. They get that horsepower by, I believe that's the way they can get that performance back and still have the fuel mileage pretty good.
Yeah, GSL, I'm sure they're much more reliable. Of course, I don't really have the money to buy anything with a turbo anyways, but nowadays, it's pretty standard operating procedure on a lot of them. So I'm sure they're much more reliable because these cars now go 200,000, whereas in the old days, you're lucky to get 100,000. In the real old days, you had to change the points, plugs, and condenser every 10,000 miles.
Rural mail carrier, he did good to get 50,000 miles out of those old Chevys. He drove, he always bought Biscaynes, though. And cheapest thing that he could find, because the dust would just eat them alive, because it was all dirt roads. There weren't any paved roads. I think he did about 85 to 100 miles a day on dirt roads for almost 40 years, I guess, time. And he got to get pulled out of the ditches all the time. Because he was one of those guys, he was always out there, you know, snow, whatever, he put his chains on for the snow and running out there. Of course, running on dirt didn't hurt him. But he didn't have that much pavement to be concerned about. But he would keep those things, and we'd use them as a second car for a long time. And every time he slammed the truck top, dust would come out of those cars for years after that.
then, aren't we, Bernice? She lived on a dirt road out on a farm. And I drove a lot of them coyote hunting and that. And the standard shifts is all I had. And I went through a half section one time out there coyote hunting. I was by myself, and there was about 12 inches of snow. You know, I turned off the main road. I didn't realize it was a half section, Jerry, and that 53 Chevy, I had snow tires on it, recaps, of course. And I think it was about $10 a piece. And that thing just like went to the frame. And I kicked it up in second gear, and I just kept that sucker going. And it was like being on a slalom or something back and forth. It was a farmer's road, and I made it to the next mile section, and I just thank God that I didn't stall out, because there wouldn't have been a farmer in the world come down that road for days, you know.
We generally put snow tires on my cars, you know, usually around January, say when I was living in areas where we had a little bit of snow, which wasn't that much. When we lived up near Charlotte, we'd have snow up here once in a while. I just had a second set of you know, rear tires or front. You know, when they went to front wheel drive, though, I actually had these special chains. It was looked more like cables instead of chains that would work on front wheel drives. I had some of those on one of my Toyotas, and I could go that little thing. I could go where nobody else could go, and that course, I bet the thing didn't weigh 2,000 pounds. I don't guess, but I could pull in that. It had about 15 or 16 inches up there one year, and I could get to work, and nobody else could. But I had those chains. I didn't depend on snow tires, but that's just a rite of passage for us. My dad did it, you know, usually, especially during the rainy season, he always did it. But he told me one time, he said, sometimes all I did was get stuck worse.
Yeah, I give my change that come off of my Dodge Aspen wagon, I think it was, or one of the Toyotas, I'm not really sure. I give them to the Goodwill down here, and I imagine they still got them, no more than they're, well, you can't use them down here, they're against the law. But the ones I never didn't like that they used up in Kansas was those studded tires. Man, those things were noisy.
They would probably work pretty good here since we get more ice than anything else. I know a couple of guys that have them, either that or have another set of those ice tires, Blizzax or whatever the brand is. I can't remember now. I know a couple of guys that have those up a little further north up around Burns where it get a little more snow. I know a couple of guys that have those things, but that's for folks who see a lot more than we do down here. But if I don't have to get out in it these days, if I don't have to, I don't get out in it. I don't really have to most of the time, so I don't worry too much about it. I got the email on the generators, too, by the way. I appreciate that. We had the heat and air guy in this morning, and it's about time for me to get I got a heat pump over here in the main part of the house, and it just struggles this time of the year. And I made a mistake of getting something like that when I should have stuck with natural gas for eating. He made me a good deal. I'm going to go ahead and go back to natural gas on that and just use regular AC. We have a pretty high SEER unit. I think it's a 16 SEER unit, but he must be, he'd been pretty busy, but he gave me a price almost I couldn't hardly turn it down. It's a lot cheaper than what I was expecting.
Yeah, natural gas here, I'd certainly go for it, but we don't have it. They run it up Highway 101 to all these new additions, but they don't come up our road. So it's not an option. Well, I guess it could be now. We got a 325-gallon propane tank out there, but we got the heat pump, and it does pretty good. And then I installed I think it's 3 kilowatts. I don't remember without going over there and looking. 220 electric heater down here in the basement, and I put an across the line thermostat on it, and in fact I think it's running over there right now. But I don't care if it did raise the price a little bit. It says it's 72 degrees down here right now, and that's real good. I like gas heaters. I worked on every kind of gas heater in the world, Jerry. As a maintenance electrician, we had them all the way up to, well, we had one that was 13 million BTUs, and two on the paint room, 275,000, and all the ones in the shop, other than the infrareds, were 225 in, 180,000 out. So all big stuff for the most part. We had electric infrareds over in the structural part, and they were 480. And then we had gas infrareds in the valve division, and they weren't worth a hoot. Those guys down there freeze to death in the wintertime, but most of them were welders, so they figured a way to stay warm. It's N0TR.
This one's 15 years old. I got sold a bill of goods when I bought this heat pump. I had gas and regular AC, and the first one gave out after 10 years, and the one upstairs just gave out after about 22 years here a little while back. This guy did this one, the one upstairs for me. It's just a simple builder type unit, about 80% efficient on the gas. It does a great job upstairs. You know, it doesn't have to run much since it's upstairs. It does a good job cooling too. And it's going to give me a 92% efficient unit up under for the downstairs. We got a big crawl space too. You can about stand. It's over 5 feet, so you can just about stand up. It's a pretty simple procedure since the gas line was already run anyway, and it's got all the stuff for the. What a previous installation is, my wife told me she spent her last winter in this house freezing because heat pump, you know, if you don't have any auxiliary heat pump, it just, you know, this one will barely maintain 71 degrees. And I like it at 72 or maybe a little warmer sometimes. But, you know, when it gets real cold, they just can't keep up and then start turning on the panels. And it's just not as efficient. It does good in the summertime, but. This thing's got one of those real complex controls, Tom, and it is so hard to get it set up. And the last guys that we got in here to look at it, one of them just threw his hand up and said, I don't have this. This thing's so complicated, I can't figure it out. It's one of those train units. And the guy that's doing this, he worked for train for a lot of years himself, and he said that thing was, he said, we sold those things for a few years. He said, but it got so complicated setting them up. People, somebody's leaving you, and everybody knows how to do it. And so we're just going to get a simple deal now. So turn the heat on when you want to heat on. Turn the AC on when you want to AC on.
Ours goes back and forth automatically, but I set it in the wintertime where the air conditioner can't possibly turn on. But one of the things that one of the more smarter technicians told us was to leave our fan running on continuous. And we put in this, it's an infrared ionizer type thing that destroys viruses and on contact and all of that. I forget. You remember the name of that, Bernice? Excuse me. But It really helps keep the dust down. I don't know how we get dust because we don't leave the windows open hardly ever. But it is dusty and in the summertime and the pollen and that, so we don't like to open the windows then. But Jerry, that power equipment direct place, what's nice is you can go over there and probably find that unit and see just how much your installers got in it. But I know you know what's a good deal and what isn't. I'm not telling you that you should have bought it there. It's good, just a good reference, you know, kind of like consumer's guide is for buying a car. You look at the ones that had the worst failure rates and that. And but that's a good website for that. The only one that this guy ever said that, and you know, I'm just going by his experience, and he had 25 years, I think is what he said, and had his own business for quite a few years. And he got tired of fooling with the public, so he went to work for another great big company here in Greenville, probably the biggest one. And he said Goodman units were something to stay away from, but I'm just going by what he said. I'm not saying that. But you take a guy like that's been doing it for years, he knows. We got a train out here on our heat pump, but it has sequential relays that bring in the emergency heat, you know, if it gets to where it can't keep up with it. But heat pumps nowadays have gotten so much more efficient that they can work way below freezing now. And when I went to school on them at 46 degrees, they started going non-linear or non-efficient. They always advertise them, oh, two units out for each unit in. Well, yeah, down to 46 degrees. But now they're a lot better. But they're a lot better in a temperate climate like ours. I know we're in Kansas, Jerry. Over.
I think most heat pumps, ours is pretty efficient. Ours is a 16-seater rating. It was pretty near top of the line. It's a zero speed air handler, and it's probably a lot more than we ever needed. I kind of got sold into a bill of goods there because we've only got 1,600 heated. And I've got two units. I got one upstairs and one downstairs. And the one downstairs is 2 tons, and that's more than enough to handle it. Cooling wise, there's no problem at all. It, you know, that thing will. We got triple pane windows, and insulation is well above what the standard should be. So we don't. For instance, once it hits 72 degrees here time at night, it can get cold, but the heat won't even pop on here until about 4 o'clock in the morning. It maintains the interior heat and the air conditioning. We don't keep our air conditioning very cool at all in the summertime. Maybe 78 or 77 is about as low as we go. We don't like it cold. So it didn't really put a strain on the air conditioning that much, the refrigeration part of it. But this one, I mean, if we had a train, it was a top-of-the-line train at the time. And the funny thing about it was what I paid for that train 15 years ago. And I'm paying almost $2,000 less for this one. And this is American standard. The Goodman units are... I'm familiar with those. Those are bargain basement type things. You kind of, sometimes you get what you pay for, sometimes you don't. They always tell me train built the best stuff for some things, and put the controls, somebody else built better controls. And I got a Honeywell control on this one upstairs, thermostat. It's been real, real efficient, works great. And that's what I'm going to do downstairs too, Honeywell. We'll see how it does, but it's not as expensive a mistake as it could have been. I sure made one. If I'd known then what I know now, I would never go to a heat pump downstairs for this house. But as you say, it's a lot more efficient, but it has a hard time maintaining 72. That's what we like it at. My wife can't stand that 85-degree heat coming out of a heat pump vent either. She likes it warm. So we'll see how it comes out there. I feel pretty sure that we're going to get a good installation. It remains to be seen how good a choice we made on this one, but I think it's going to be okay.
This is NGLTR. Yes, on everything, and that's the way we are in the summertime. We don't like it cold either, Jerry. My neighbor, you go over there, is like an iceberg. And he likes it that way, and he keeps it that way in the wintertime, too. His wife don't like it. Now, I had about 16 inches of insulation blowed in over the top of about a foot that was in there, so we're insulated real well. But I don't know what the R value'd be in there, but it's way above what's required. And then American Standard is a good unit. A lot of these companies now, like Carolina Heating and Cooling and Waldrop, they're selling units that are under their name that they say they had designed in their name. And that's all well and good, but one of them told me, well, it's just an American Standard. And he was very happy with them, and he had a lot of experience. And I asked several of the more knowledgeable ones, this one guy was an instructor for Waldrop, and him and the other fellow I know that owned his own business, now he said 16 share was a good choice, Jerry. So I think you made the right choice there. But I don't, you know, ours is 12 years old, and I was asking him, you know, he said, oh, no, it's in good shape, and we've had the evaporator changed in it, and it was under warranty, and we had the thermostatic expansion valve changed in it, and that was under warranty. And those were expensive jobs. They're not if you can do them yourself, but if you have somebody do them, they're expensive. And the only thing left out there is a compressor, and God help us, I hope that don't fail. But he said, oh, no. Around here, he says, they can go 15, 20 years. But what I don't like is the back room, the bedroom, if it's on, we keep it on 72 or 71 during the day. Sometimes I'll turn it to 70 if it's nice outside so it don't come on. But we like it warm. But the back bedroom will just be like 70.5 or something like that. I want it warmer than that, man. I'll turn the electric blanket on if it's that cool on one, but to warm the sheets up. But I don't like it cold either, and I don't like a draft on me. And I don't think the heat pumps put out as nice warm air as the gas. I think the best thing we ever had was when we heated with wood up in Kansas. And Buddy, that kept her warm.
Nothing heats like wood or coal, for that matter. Coal, man, it doesn't burn that clean, but it sure does it give you a lot of heat. But, yeah, we usually use an electric, a lot, real lightweight electric blanket as well, just to keep it warm. And I turn it down to 70 at night sometimes, but I don't like the heat pump, at least with this one, it runs a lot. And so it'll run, just dries everything out. Of course, it dries during the wintertime anyway, but seems to dry more than the other one does. And we had a terrible time with dust, too. And we didn't have as much trouble with gas as we did with the heat pump. And I'm going to ask him about, you know, they've got some filters they can use in them that, you know, I don't know if it's ionized or not. They got some electrostatic filters, I think, that may work better than the other types. But we change ours out about once every 2 or 3 months. So, you know, the return unit filters, they're easy to get to. But like I said, she just got tired of feeling that 85-degree heat coming out. She's used to feeling 140-degree. And it doesn't run very long. The other problem we had with control time was that heat pump, you know, unless you've got it, you know, loaded right, which I think ours is probably underloaded, that thing, you know, it's going to run for a certain period of time, whether it needs it or not, because it's got to cycle through, I guess. And, for instance, we keep ours set on 78 in the summertime. It may run. If it starts running, it may run until it gets down to 74. And by the time it turns off, I feel like I got an icicle sitting off the tip of my nose. Because, like I said, I don't like it that cool. I don't want it terribly hot either. But I don't like it. 74 degrees starts getting cool, and our kids keep theirs like down to the low 70s or even 68. I mean, I have to wear a jacket when I go over there.
You are. With a piece of sausage in my mouth here, Jerry. They have an anticipator in those Honeywell thermostats and that puts false heat on the bimetal inside of it. Of course, a lot of them is electronic now, to anticipate. It makes it shut off a little early because the fan will go ahead and blow for a while afterwards, you know. But there always was, in my days, a 4-degree differential there. So if you put it on 74, it could pull it down to 70 before it goes off. Normally, they don't go quite that far, but that can be a fault of the thermostat, too. But they do that, Jerry, to prevent the unit from short-cycling, because every time that shuts off, the pressures in the lines has to equalize the refrigerant so that the compressor doesn't start back up against the head pressure, kind of like an air compressor. You know what I'm talking about.
I mean, I think part of the reason time is just this, it's probably underloaded. It's probably more than we need for the square footage we got downstairs. We didn't notice that with the oven, of course. The one that now, even the one up that we've got upstairs, the refrigeration unit, is the minimum. This has been 3 years ago. The minimum they do now is about 14, I think, is the minimum that they sell. Normally they go to 16 if you got one more square feet. But I don't think it's probably more about 600 square feet up here. But the rear of the house is, even though it's a story and a half, and the front of the rear of the house is almost like two floor stories. It's just flat up. So we get an Australian western sunset, so it gets kind of warm, but the windows help some, but it does need a little, it needs more refrigeration. It needs heat up here. It's very comfortable up here for me right now. It's set at 72, and my wife, she'll come upstairs, she said, maybe we ought to start sleeping up here. And I said, well, I'm going to put it into that. I'm going to try to get this thing resolved downstairs so at least we'll be comfortable. I want to stay a little cool in the summertime and warm in the wintertime, Tom, and I think I'll be reasonably happy if I can achieve that.
Comes more important as you get older. The old boys in the machine shop always said that when you get old, Tom, your blood gets thin. You know, I kind of laughed at the time, but you know what? I don't laugh anymore. Some of them guys wear thermal underwear to work because that machine shop was cold. It had 55-foot ceilings in it, and it was cold. You had to be right under a heater to stay warm. Well, this thing we use is called a Phenomenal Air, A-I-R-E, I think. Phenomenal Air, and that's the thing that's supposed to kill all viruses on contact and that. And it's in the return air. It's right under the fan where it sucks over the top of it. But I think it does help the dust, but at any rate, it's done a good job. It's a train. I had another return air duct put in on it. It is a SEER 13, and yeah, you're right, they won't stall anything. I don't think the government will allow them to put anything under 14 now or thereabouts. David, that comes on here now and then, he could tell you that for sure. He's the expert, not me. But the only thing I've done is change out the main contactor in it. And when they was checking it the other day, I had them stick it in there. And David graciously offered to do it, but they were here. And I had bought it and had it as a spare because... I can't hardly get down, Jerry, like that without getting leg cramps real bad to work in small spots like that. And I changed one of the capacitors in it, and I have another one sitting up here ready to go in. Just preventative maintenance. When I used to work on them, that was probably one of the most common things to go wrong. But I worked on some huge units on the printing plant and on a hospital, and they were 480, and they used 225 pounds of Freon, something like that, in them. They looked like a six-cylinder engine. They called them semi-hermetics. But I did the controls mostly more than the gas. Like this one of ours now uses R410, which is a blend. And when I got my HVAC license, I had to know all that stuff. But you know what? That's been many years ago, and I've since then forgot that, Jerry.
Yep, I know what you mean. They did run a, when they installed the heat pump, they had to run a 60-amp line set. And, of course, he's going to leave that there and just going to put a junction box up under the house and terminate that. So we'll have it there, so you don't know, you might need it again some point in time. He's going to leave that there, and since we already had it set up for gas furnace originally, where I got the exhaust down there, he told me it's his exhaust now, so they only exhausts on these higher efficiency furnaces now are only 3 inches. They just use 3 inch diameter PVC. They don't even use they have to use that 5 and 6 inch stuff like they used to. And it's, they said it's these higher efficiency ones actually produce a little water, so you got to have a little, drain. And I got plenty of crawl space, so it can elevate. Sorry, elevate. It can elevate a little bit, tilt it, so it get drainage. But we went up, looked up under it. Like I said, everything's there, so you don't have to run anything. That's the biggest thing. That work is in pretty good shape. But you know, that's we get a fine dust and hot finer dust than we used to with when we ran gas. I'm not sure if it's I looked inside. You know, I had them look inside the ductwork and didn't see anything out of the ordinary. Other than just being needing to be cleaned. But I'm not sure if it's something, you know, something causing that, or it's just the way of the world or what. But he's gonna take a look at that for us too when he started installing. He's gonna do it next week. I mean, he thinks he's got it set up so he can do it either Wednesday or Thursday this coming week, which suits me just fine. But this other one, they always give you trouble in the middle part of the summer. It's so damn hot you can't stand it. And this train, when installed it, we did it. It took them a week to install this one, the train, the heat pump. And now this other one, they did it in a day. And they'll do this one in about a day, too, more than likely. But, anyway, it's something. We're going to give it a try. But, you know, at the price range he quoted about, you know, it's not that. I mean, it's an expense. It's something we expect, and we have the money set back. And that way we can do that. But the government, if we spend it, the government can't get it. Isn't that right?
Couldn't bet on it with Biden in there. He ain't got, I don't know how many $100 million going to the IRS so that he can monitor you for anything over $600 now. Yeah, I may have gotten that wrong, but that was my understanding. They can look at your bank account now, and if you do anything over $600, they know it. Whereas it used to be $10,000, which that wasn't a problem for me. But, yeah, I think you're better off with the regular filters. Just buy a good filter, Jerry, and with a high rating on it. I used to work on those electrostatic precipitators, and the ones I worked on used like 10,000 volts. And they were just a set of wires that the smoke from the welders went through. They worked very well. But in ham radio, they can generate spurious harmonics. So I think you'd be better off doing without the electrostatic filters. Because that's probably what they amount to. When you say electrostatic, you're going to have some high voltage in there. And yes, I had to change the territory chamber in our gas heater. It was, oh, I don't know, 91% efficient or something back up in Kansas. And they actually take so much heat out of the gas that it condenses and there is a drain. Now, in the old days, they had to have some kind of thing to take the acid out of it. I forget what they called that. But then they got to where they didn't. They found that it didn't need to be in there. But the water from it drained out. I'm going to have to look at that drain on my heat pump because it was under the snow for several days there. You're not supposed to let those drains get plugged up. Even on the heat pumps. But we'll have to see. Jerry, I'm going to need to go out and check the birds outside. We got, 2,400 square feet upstairs, and we got that much downstairs, of course, in the basement. I don't have any idea what it would cost to replace that, but I'm thinking $10,000 to $12,000. But I was just curious about that. If you get time, email me that and tell me what yours was. I think you said 1,600 feet. That'd give me a rough estimate. Doesn't matter if it goes out. I ain't gonna be the one that puts it in. It's just got to get done. You're at the mercy. Anyway, Jerry, really enjoyed it. Yeah, always educational. And love hearing from you. 73s, and we'll catch you down the line in 4DJC and 0TR.
Well, good afternoon. Hopefully there won't be any snow showing up today, but it might. It's staying around 6 here, but hopefully it won't show up. Good talking to you. Tell Bernice I said hello, and you guys have a great afternoon. 73 is 0TR and 4DJC.
Oh, did you get the email I sent you this morning, Jerry? Yeah, it was a good one.